the ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 345. Slight change in format to the podcast today. Normally, I do a couple of features like Penny Stock with Potential. I sometimes have two guests on, and I also dedicate the podcast to someone who's given me a cracking review on iTunes. That's not going to happen today. I'm going to dedicate the podcast to Tony the Manini from Asia Met, ticker code ARS, A-R-S. Now, please, as I always say, do your own research. Do not buy any stock based solely on a tip or recommendation or information solely here on this website, on this podcast, I mean. But I do think, I strongly advise you to do your own research on this company. I own Asia Met shares. And I also said to Tony, I bought some for my brother and my father. I believe in Tony the man. I believe in the asset. And I believe in his ambition. And I do say on the podcast with Tony, so there's a lot of CEOs on AIM who have ambition. They don't have his track record, though. And they don't have his assets, And I think when you put these three elements together, plus they have cash already. They did a placing recently with some high net worth individuals. And we're talking billionaires, millionaires who want a part of Tony's action. You know what I'm saying? So please listen to this podcast and listen to what Tony's saying. He makes a lot of sense. He's a cracking track. And I've done lots of a couple of blog posts on this company. And like I said, Tony is well known for taking Oxiana, previous company there, from 3 million market cap, 3 million to 6 billion. And he said he wants to do the same again with Asia Met. But like I said, this is not a recommendation. This is just a starting point for you to do your own research. So tomorrow I'll have a podcast. We'll be back to normal. But for today, I'm just chatting to Tony Manini. And by all means, go to sharepickers.com. Right there, you'll see a couple of links as to where Tony will be appearing in the next week or so. I spoke to him. He's in Melbourne. But he will be in London next week. And he's doing a couple of PR events. And you can see where at sharepickers.com. Click through and you can probably buy tickets to a couple of places he's going. And chat to himself. He's a really nice, down-to-earth guy who knows his stuff. Joining me on the podcast right now is the main man, the Tony Manini of Asia Met Resources. How are you, Tony? You all right, fella?
Very good, guy. Thanks, Justin. Good to be talking to you.
Yeah, you too, fella. Listen, I'm not only invested in the company, I bought some shares in the company for my father. I bought some shares in the company for my brother. Am I right to do this? Because I'm thinking medium to long term, this is a good value play. Am I right in doing this, Tony?
Oh, absolutely, Justin. And I think that's the approach that you're taking is absolutely the right approach. Asia Met Resources is, a real value equation right now. And I think that's one of the key things that investors need to be cognizant of when assessing this company and its team. We're really, what we would consider to be the low point in the cycle. The company's trading at a very deep discount to its valuation in our view on any historical metrics that you like to measure. And, the reality is that right now, with the asset base we have, that you couldn't replace the cost of actually doing the work that we've done on the properties with the current market cap of the company. So for anyone like yourself and anyone else that's an investor that's sort of thinking forward in the medium term, Asia Met, we believe, represents fantastic value for those types of investors.
Yeah, I see it honestly as a multi-bagger situation, and I'm in it for the medium to long term here. And there's three reasons why I think this, and I've written several blog posts about Asia Met, and I like you, and the team there very well. First of all, I think it's management. You guys have got a proven track record, especially you taking in a company from a couple of mil to $3 or $6 billion in Oxiana. So that's management. You've got the assets there, and you also have the ambition. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, look, I think you've hit the nail on the head. The asset base I've already alluded to, it's a very strong asset base. Very substantial copper resources already drilled up to N43101 or JORC compliant. You know, they've got good grade, they've got significant upside, they're near surface, they're readily amenable to open pit mining, you've got higher grade zones there, good access, logistics, infrastructure, you know, good relationships with the government. And, you know, I guess the team is a team that, you know, as you alluded to just now, has sort of done all this before. So it's really our modus operandi, it's our passion, it's our drive, it's what we do for a living. You know, we've done this sort of six times or so over the last sort of 12, 15 years, where we take projects from a relatively early stage through exploration, through studies, through the development curve and into production. And it's really that value equation that drives multiple returns from an investment. So, you know, Oxiana was a great example of that. Four mines built over an eight-year period, 3 million market cap to 8 billion market cap in that period of time. That's really, you know, our genetics, if you like. That's what we do. That's what the team does. That's what we're driven to do. So here in, you know, AsiaMet, you know, we've got the resources, we've got the people, and, you know, we've done all this before. This is not new, and we're going to do it again.
I love that, Tony. So there's the ambition. So essentially, let's think, you know, dream scenario or realistic scenario. Where would you like to see AsiaMet be? Is it market cap-wise, I mean, where are you now, right? 7, 8 million, something like that? But where would you like to see, you know, AsiaMet be in, say, 5, 10 years?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think the equation is pretty simple to see in front of you in respect of the asset base that's there. So we're talking about, you know, the BK project that we're currently working on a PEA on. That project capable of doing initially 20,000-25,000 tonnes of copper a year. Let's say it's got a cash margin of around a dollar. That's, you know, what our initial thoughts are in respect of this project. So that's essentially a project which can generate, you know, at $2.20 copper, $2.50 copper, it can generate a dollar cash margin. So you're talking about, you know, $50 million, you know, $45, $50 million of free cash flow on a multiple of 7. So, you know, there's $350 million just in that project alone. Then there's potential to expand that further, you know, to get that from 20,000 tonnes up to 30,000 tonnes. And then you have Bouton coming along behind it as a large project which could do 75, 80,000 tonnes, which is fourfold the size of, you know, the BK project. It gives you some idea of the metrics. So there's no reason off that asset base that this company, over time, getting these projects into production and being a producer of sort of somewhere in the order of, you know, 80 to 100,000 tonnes of copper could not be, it should be, valued at $1 billion plus.
I like those figures, Tony. You're the man. And so let's look at the assets. So you've got BK there, like you said, that's the next thing you're working on. And then you've got Bouton. And also you've got Jelly there, gold assets. So, let's start with BK, because that's the immediate future. So what is the next milestone for you here?
So BK, as I alluded to just a few minutes ago, we are just moving into the PEA phase now. So we've got all the, you know, consultants just being appointed. We'll manage that ourselves. We've got the mining studies underway. We've got detailed metallurgical test work, so you know, the second phase of the met testing to determine, you know, how well this performs in a leaching scenario. Then we have, you know, all the infrastructure inputs, the various inputs that go into, you know, the environmental management, etc. So quite a lot of news flow coming out of that. Those PEA studies over the next few months, they'll all be brought together. The economic analysis will be undertaken in the middle of the first quarter, and we should all have all that wrapped up and coming to the market at the end of Q1 next year. But as I said, you know, very strong news flow leading up to that, because we've, you know, we've obviously got a lot of work going on to sort of bring all the components of the PEA together. I think importantly, Justin, it's just worth pointing out that when we do pull it all together, it's going to be the first time that, you know, the company's really had some, you know, some economic analysis and some hard numbers around the VK project. And I think at that time, I think people will see the types of numbers that I've just been talking about in respect of a 20,000-25,000 ton per annum copper production scenario. You know, those numbers will become, you know, public numbers with which have got some sort of real work behind them. So I think it's going to be a turning point in terms of the way people perceive both the project and the company.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, for people who don't understand what a PEA is, that's sort of officializes the economic side of it, does it? Well, I mean, if you can explain that.
Yeah, look, that's exactly what it does. So I've talked about all the various inputs that go into it. So far, you've seen over the last sort of 9 to 12 months, we've done all the drilling work. So we've done the drilling evaluation of the deposit. We know we've got a deposit there with certain tons and grade. We have done some early stage metallurgical test work, and we're taking that to the next level. We now put some pits on that, open pit shells, optimizations, input costs for moving waste, moving ore. All those things come together to give you the operating costs of the mine and the cost to build the mine. So it's really the time that the numbers are wrapped around the scenario, this mining scenario that we've been working towards. So, you know, that's the point where the financial aspects of the project come to the fore.
Yeah. Okay, so still talking about the assets. Copper, the price of copper. Now, everyone sees it as a barometer of global growth. And at the moment, because of the China situation, you know, people know it's slowing down. They don't know how much it's slowing down. Are you worried? I mean, the share price, to me, seems quite suppressed at the moment. And is this the reason you think why? Because people have worries about the price of copper? Or explain where you see copper in a couple of years' time, though.
Yeah, look, very good question. I think just a couple of points. So copper right now, from our perspective and all the analysis that we've done, is behaving exactly as we would have expected it to behave at this point. It's, you know, it's currently sitting sort of around the $2, you know, $2.20 mark, something like that. This year in 2015, you know, the market was forecast to be in surplus, so somewhere in the order of 500, you know, 1,000 tons of surplus. We're not going to see anywhere near that level of surplus, but we are seeing some short-term copper price weakness, exactly as anticipated. As the Chinese economy stabilizes, we are also seeing, don't forget, some, you know, some good growth in the US economy. So, you know, all of those things are, you know, positives for copper. Thinking ahead, this project is not being built for today. This project, you know, is being built for a couple of years out. And, you know, at that time is really the time that the copper price is forecast to rise off the back of supply side constraint and, you know, deficits in the market. So, you know, now's actually a great time to be building a project, Justin. You know, while the cyclicity is actually on the down curve, you know, contractor rates are cheaper. All the reasons that you see commodities weaker, steel is cheaper, cement is cheaper. There's a whole lot of positive things related to a down part of the cycle. Unfortunately, these, you know, obviously impact upon our, you know, the share price and the weakness that we're seeing there. But in terms of actually building a project, very good time to be building a project. And, you know, we're targeting to bring that project online when the copper price is pushing back up to, you know, $3 level and above.
Yeah, and also, likewise, it's a good time. Like I said, if you know, you guys are experienced, you have the assets, you know, we all know it's very cyclical, the prices of commodities. And so, you know, while none of us has a crystal ball, we can pretty much say, you know, this downturn in the price of copper, is only temporary. So as an investor, surely this is also a good time to purchase some shares, because like I said, the share price is suppressed because of this, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the copper price weakness now, you know, as I said, it's pretty well as we predicted it would be. But I would still say to you that if you've got a good project, you can still make very good money today. I mean, when we built the first project in Oxiana, the copper price was 63 cents a pound. It's actually sitting at $2.15 a pound today. So, you know, very substantial difference. And you know, very good margins to be made if you've got a good deposit with high margins. So, you know, the project that we have here at BK is a project that, you know, irrespective of where we are in the cycle, even at today's prices, this project will make, you know, we predict this project is going to make some seriously good money. So, you know, we think it's a good time to be, you know, developing a copper asset. It's a good time to be getting exposure to good quality copper assets, and, you know, to hold and get a lift both out of two things. One is the value curve that we're creating by developing the project, and the second part is, you know, just the cyclicity, as you mentioned, in terms of, you know, coming off this low point and the copper price rising. So we should get a double whammy out the back end when the project is up and running.
Nice. Okay, let's talk about the location there in Indonesia. The question you're saying, what's the infrastructure like and what's the market price? I mean, you know, where are you selling the copper? Is it easy to transport that copper?
Yeah, look, the project itself is in central Kalimantan. The logistics are pretty good for the project. I mean, you know, I've heard it said in places that, you know, it's a remote area. But look, historically, it was a reasonably remote area. But, you know, what's happened in the past sort of 5 to 10 years is that, you know, palm oil has come to Kalimantan and many other parts of the world. So we've had quite a lot of sort of new roads and infrastructure built in this part of the world. So, you know, the project has got very good access. We've got a bitumen, you know, dual carriage bitumen road, a bit over halfway out of the project, and then an all-weather sheeted road into the project. So we're taking things in and out, you know, with trucks, two-wheel drive vehicles in and out to the site, and there's logging contractors bringing, you know, semi-trailer loads of logs out of the area. So no problems getting materials in and materials out of the site. From central Kalimantan, the capital, Palangka Raya, down to the coast, the ports, is around about another 300 kilometres. We're talking about, you know, producing copper cathode. It'll be stacked, bundled on semi-trailers and transported down to the port. I personally don't think that much of this copper will get outside of Indonesia. You know, Indonesia's got a, you know, population of 230 million. It's, you know, it's a rapidly growing economy. It's a rapidly growing industrial base. And, you know, the requirement for tube, wire, cable in country is growing, strong and growing. So I personally don't think a lot of the copper will actually get outside the country. If it indeed does, you know, move outside of Indonesia, as I said, we actually have direct access to a port and can readily ship that copper off to the markets elsewhere in Asia. I don't think it's going to go too far.
Yeah, I know a private investor who knows a lot about when you were Kalimantan, and he lost a bit of faith with Kalimantan. So, and he basically wants to know what has changed now. What has changed in them and you?
Oh, there's a lot of things have changed. So, the company, I guess, historically has always been, you know, very much focused on early stage exploration and farming the project out to big companies to progress it. And the big companies have historically been looking, you know, for big projects. And because the project has been, you know, considered to be a remote site with poor infrastructure in the past, the big companies have naturally been wanting to find super-sized deposits which could carry the cost of building the infrastructure. With this road access that I talked about earlier, you know, the ease of getting in and out of the project now, moving materials in and out, therefore enable the company to look at these sort of small to medium scale opportunities which exist on the property. So that's a big change. These assets, you know, I guess historically haven't been looked at that closely because they wouldn't have been of a scale to carry the infrastructure. The other big change is that you've now got a team in place. So we've obviously got a new team in place led by myself and a group of very experienced guys who are mining guys. The company historically has not really had a mining team in place because it's never needed to. It's always had the project farmed out to other companies. So we've got a big, you know, we've got a mining team in place now. We've got very good access and logistics, and we've been able to tackle these sort of smaller to medium scale projects that exist. And having the capability, we've actually been able to sort of fast track and assess these projects very quickly with a development perspective and a growth perspective. So not just purely exploration now, it's actually looking to get some of these assets through, developed into production, generating strong cash flow, and then utilizing that cash flow to do other exploration work and to grow the company. So quite a lot of change besides the name change to Asia Met. There's actually been a lot of fundamental change sitting behind that, and I think you can see that coming through in terms of the results and the focus of the company on this development at BK as a platform to, you know, really build out a sizable copper gold business.
Yeah, so he did mention that. He said, why did Freeport, you know, walk away from it? And so was that, you say, they're after a monster project, and is that reason why, basically?
Yeah, look, two key reasons why. So number one is all the major companies, inclusive of Freeport, are always looking for, I mean, Freeport's one of the largest copper producers in the world. I think it might be number two or number three largest copper producer in the world. To move the needle in respect of, you know, the earnings of that company needs mega-sized deposits. So Freeport was very much focused on finding mega-scale deposits. The other aspect is, as we all know, the downturn, you know, in this cyclical industry started around about sort of 3 years ago. And at that time, Freeport, you know, have made a decision to cut back on their exploration globally. And in Indonesia, effectively shut down all their exploration effort altogether. So it was nothing to do about with the quality of the property. It was more to do with timing and more to do with really the scale of the projects that you know, Freeport was looking for. From our perspective, you know, the outcome's been terrific. As new management coming into the company, we've seen this, you know, outstanding opportunity for this medium scale project at BK that we could, you know, get into production relatively quickly. So, you know, it's for us to have that back 100% from Freeport, you know, with the team to be able to deliver it, the assets, you know, has really been, you know, a great opportunity and something that we've, you know, we've grasped and running with.
Yeah, so timeline-wise, when do you see the mining starting here at BK?
Look, we've got, as I said, the PEA first quarter, then I expect that we'll be in around 12 months on feasibility study, and then we'll probably have about 12 to 15 months of construction before development. So if you sort of work all that out, we're sort of talking about 2.5 years out, you know, for first production.
And then the thoughts on Bouton, you know, how long will that take?
Yeah, Bouton, big project, you know, a big project, as I mentioned earlier, capable of producing 70, 80,000 tonnes of copper a year. We're currently converting that licence from an exploration licence to a production licence. That'll very significantly de-risk the project because it gives us, you know, plus 25 years of long-term mining tenure. We'll then look to progress that gradually. Because the main focus will be on BK initially, we'll look to, you know, continue to move the studies along the curve and potentially look at, you know, bringing someone in to assist us develop that larger project. So we'll start to move that forward next year. We want to get BK up and running in production, generating cash flow. And, you know, at that point, we'll be in a position where we can accelerate the development of Bouton coming off the back of success at BK.
Okay, and the third asset you have, because I did a blog post about, you know, basically valuing you just on one asset, and even then you're very undervalued. And I didn't even mention, well, I've mentioned Bouton, I said, you know, that's there as well in the background. Also, Jelly there, with a gold prospect. What's the plans for that, Tony?
Yeah, look July.
July, simply, sorry, not Jelly.
July. If you look at it, it's a nice term, Jelly. If you look at that project in comparison to the value that sits in the copper assets, you know, we've essentially assessed that it's been pretty much a non-core asset in our portfolio. Although it's a quality asset in terms of the drill results, you know, very high grade gold, and you know, could be up and running as a small gold project for a party that was interested in doing that. We've actually had approaches from a number of parties on that asset. So what we're looking to do there, Justin, is to extract some value for that asset by, number one, getting the production license granted, so converting the exploration license to production. Currently, that's underway. And then we'll look to do some sort of corporate transaction which will extract value that we can recycle that funding back into, you know, developing the copper assets. So, you know, enhance shareholder value on those very valuable copper assets by, you know, recycling some of the funds that we hopefully are looking to get in the door from a divestment or partnering on July.
Yeah. Okay, let's look at your cash position at the moment. You've obviously quite funded well for the next, I don't know how long, but you recently did a placement that was oversubscribed. It was £1 million raised. Where's that money going? And can you, you know, I mean, I've been told that a number of your friends and well-known people, high net worth people, are involved in this. Is this right?
Yeah, look, we've got a, you know, I guess where we started out in this conversation today, you know, we've actually built six mines over the last sort of, you know, 12, 15 years or so. You know, we continue to do that. We, you know, work on a number of development projects as we speak. So, you know, over the years, we've made a lot of people a lot of money. We have a very loyal shareholder base. Some of those shareholders, you know, are, you know, ultra high net worths and people that understand the business very well. They've been CEOs of large mining companies. They've, you know, been people that have built very substantial mining businesses in their own right, and they can see the value and the undervalued situation that we currently have, and, you know, have supported the company in, you know, quite a substantial way so far, and they'll continue to support us going forward. They're people that, you know, understand it's a cyclical business, they understand values, they understand undervalues, and very keen to get some exposure in their own, you know, investment portfolios and support us to sort of take it through that, you know, the value generation curve that we're on. So good, strong support there. In terms of our cash position, yes, we've just put together, you know, my view is that the equity is extremely expensive at the moment in terms of, you know, the share price is low, so it's expensive to be raising money at these levels. So we're trying to sort of minimise that as much as we possibly can. So we put together, £1 million now. That will see us through the PEA in its entirety and, you know, get us through to the point where we're ready to commence the feasibility studies next year. At the same time, we've just had a, you know, quick review of the other projects, and I did mention July, and I did mention, you know, the opportunity in terms of bringing some additional capital into the company through a divestment or partnership on July. So, you know, working both at the corporate end as well as, you know, our existing, you know, the existing money that we have in the tin, And then I guess other angles that we're looking at, you know, we do have interest in the project. There are people who, you know, can look through the cycle who are in the business, and there is, you know, there is some interest in terms of, you know, project level investment as well. So, you know, we're running a number of different options, you know, to fund the project going forward, very much like, you know, we've done on any number of occasions in the past. So in good shape there, Justin.
Yeah, and I can see some of the guys there. You've made quite a few guys a lot of money. I can sense, I can almost picture them rubbing their hands saying, yeah, Tony and the team are back in town doing their thing. And I quite like that. But so listen, as if you haven't, you know, given us excellent detail there on the company and the projects coming up, if you can, give us 3 bullet points as to why anyone who's not invested, and I can't see why they're not invested, because like I said, I'm invested. I've invested for my dad and my brother. Give us 3 reasons why you think they should get invested here.
Yeah, look, very simply, it sort of summarises, you know, the discussion we've had today. So, quality assets and people, as I said, substantial copper resource base, solid grade, very shallow, significant upside, you know, open pit mining, high grade zones, good access, logistics infrastructure, good relationships there in Indonesia, a place we're very familiar with, we've worked for over 20 years and executed a number of projects on. And you've got a team, you know, which has got a proven track record in country, you know, in Indonesia, in discovery, mine development, and being able to fund those developments. So that's the first point. The second point's really value. You know, the metals and mining market now is at or close to a cyclical low point. You know, our assets are very deeply discounted relatively on any historical market metrics. And, you know, the expenditure on these projects, de-risking and development of these assets, that is actually many multiples of the current value. So value on a number of levels, and then timing, Justin, I think, is the third one. So the outlook for copper, we think, is very closely, you know, is good in sort of that 2-year-plus time horizon, and that's very much aligned with the Asia development timelines. The company's, you know, obviously been reinvigorated, so we've got a good, strong team, development focus, and, you know, we're well placed in respect of being funded to go to the next level. Good, strong news flow coming up from the programs that I've outlined today, and, you know, we think the company will be, you know, progressively re-rated as we take it through this resource value curve. The first port of call there being, you know, the delivery of the PEA. So quality assets and people, value and timing.
Yeah, I like that. Tony, listen, I think there are very few companies on AIM that have, you know, your assets and your experience. But, I mean, there's plenty of CEOs out there with ambition. But, I just don't think they're the real deal. So I think you should change your name to Tony the Real Deal Manini. You know, I think that works. Is that anything that works for you?
That works very well for me. I might even get a job in the wrestling or something with a name like that.
Yeah. Tony, it's lovely to chat to you, fella. And, in fact, there's plenty of opportunities to meet Tony in London over the next few weeks. And, in fact, I'll put a link on my website, sharepickers.com. There's several places. I think you're going to Bulls and Bears. I think you're at Shares Magazine evening as well. And you're at Big Gibbs Momentous Events evening. So you're chatting to lots of private investors. And you can meet Tony the Real Deal for yourself. Tony, love to chat to you. Speak to you soon, fella.
Justin, thanks very much. Been a pleasure, and look forward to catching up soon. Cheers.
The ADBFN Podcast with Justin Waite.